good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or, you know, all that other stuff, because we do live on this rotating globe, and oh my God, do we live on. Did you see the Musk launch earlier this week and those stunning images of the rotating globe we live on, with a Tesla in front and a guy named Starman? I mean, we are living in incredibly epical times. I hope you people all realize you have now lived through a knife-edge change in history as of this week, as of a few days ago, as of Tuesday. The universe, certainly the part of it we live in here on Earth in the good old solar system, it has changed. Because what Musk has done, and I'm going to introduce my guests a little in a moment or two, but I want to kind of give you some background. Go to theothersideofmidnight.com. It's going to be very, very picture intensive tonight, so you're not going to want to miss one frame, because it's all part of a narrative leading up to a stunning conclusion that I'm not going to give away. We're only going to do that conclusion toward the end of the show, because as the lawyers love to say, you have to lay foundation. And since most everyone is totally unfamiliar with the subject tonight, again, which is one reason it's been kept under wraps for decade after decade after decade, we have to lay appropriate foundation. And I've got the perfect guy to lay that with tonight. His name is Jay Widener. So before I get into what I'm going to do in the opening wrap, let me do this. Let me introduce Jay. And we're trying to get Greg Ahrens to come on, but if Greg can't be found, he's apparently online, but we can't get him on Skype for some reason. My friend Jay Widener is a writer and a filmmaker. This is the most abbreviated bio of anybody I've ever had on this show. Called by Wired Magazine an authority on hermetic and alchemical traditions, Widener has authored two major books and produced over 25 television, internet, YouTube documentaries. He is currently producing programming for Gaia.com, and he's just released his second feature film, The Last Avatar, which is showing on Viamo to glowing reviews. That last part I actually, read from Jay. Just one little honesty here. You're on the other side of midnight, and the reason I call this show that is because it's kind of through the looking glass. It's kind of Alice. This is the time of night we used to normally talk about all that crazy, weird stuff that only one guy in all of the world would cover. His name was Art Bell, and he was on in the middle of the night. Well, if you look at the news, if you're up in daytime, which most people are, and you're at work and you're looking on your computer and monitoring your social networks and the various feeds and the mainstream and all the stuff that's being thrown at us these days, I don't think you could have avoided noticing that all that stuff we used to talk about only at this time of night, now it's going 24/7 and every hour is like a new episode. This is reality television central. Remember what my friend Gene Roddenberry said? But Dick, if it's real, it will be on television. Well, it's all over television. And tonight what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a conspiracy, a diversion, an incredible shaggy dog story that's been with us for almost, if not a half a century. I haven't actually done the math tonight because the numbers keep adding up. But it started around the time that we went to the moon. When I was at JPL, a literal witness to history, walking through the press room, and I saw this very bizarre duo, one guy I knew very, very well. His name is Frank Bristow. He was the head of public affairs for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which, of course, was under contract to NASA as one of their centers around the country. And the reason I was there, it was a few days after the Apollo 11 landing, where we, CBS News, together in the august majesty of Walter Cronkite, had covered for 42 straight hours without sleep men going to the moon. So then they ordered us from New York. They said, well, you got to leave there and you got to go up the street to JPL because in a couple of days they're going to fly a Mariner spacecraft past Mars. We don't want to miss that, so you guys have to be there. So we moved everything, lock, stock, and barrel, from Downey, California, where the Rockwell Corporation had built a huge set at my request, a walk-through solar system, so we could have very special guests kind of during our 42 hours of live Apollo 11 coverage in July of 1969. we could basically talk to various people and experts and researchers and celebrities in the solar system about what presaged that night as two human beings for the first time, and I have to say this in ellipses, modern history, landed again on the moon. And I remember vividly, we rushed up to JPL, and you know, when I arrived, it was the usual check-ins, and you know, you have to get assigned seats and credentials and all that stuff. And I watched this guy, one guy, he was wandering around. He looked like a cowboy out of an old Maverick. I mean, he was wearing one of these long linen dusters, kind of pale, pale tan. And he was wearing a cowboy hat, and he had this kind of like, you know, Pony Express pouch over his shoulder. And he was going around the press room and handing out a little something to every member of the press corps covering the Mariner, I think it was Mariner 6 flyby of Mars in the next 24 or 36 hours, including like Walter Sullivan from the New York Times. And I forget who the big honcho was at the LA Times. And the Japanese, of course, had 1,000 people covering the mission from Japan, all with their cameras in the back of the Von Karman Auditorium. It was like a NASA Woodstock. We would do this every couple of years. NASA would go someplace really interesting, and we would all get together and try to cover it. You know, I was covering it for CBS. And so there we were, and this guy's walking around handing. So finally, you know, I didn't know whether he came to me or I went over to him. And I found out what he was handing out. He was handing out a little mimeoed one sheet folded over. And inside was a Mylar. Mylar was a big deal back in those days. A Mylar American flag. Except it wasn't printed in the normal colors, you know, red, white, and blue. It was Mylar yellow and white. The stars were white, but the stripes were yellow. They weren't red, and the background was Mylar, luminized like aluminum foil Mylar. And I'm looking at this thing, and I open it up, and I start reading. And what it was a tract. Tracts are like what, you know, Thomas Paine wrote back 1776, you know, we got to break from England, that kind of thing. Long before the internet, this was a blog, except it was a written blog. And he was handing it out to every member of the press corps, which were thousands gathered in Von Karman to cover the flyby of Mariner 6 past Mars, the same week that we had just landed two human beings on the moon. And most of those guys and gals had actually just come up like we had done from Downey, covering Apollo from Rockwell to JPL. So I'm reading this, you know, while I'm trying to get my credentials, wait for my credentials. And remember those films where they do double takes, close-ups? Because what this guy was claiming and handing out to every member of the press corps, and I wrote this up in the foreword to Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. So you can find this whole story if you buy, you know, the book, which, by the way, now might not be a bad idea because we're going to talk about some groundbreaking history-shattering paradigm stuff tonight regarding what is in that book. So you might want to get that book. And I'll plug Jay's later because what he's going to talk about tonight is incredibly, immensely relevant. The dots, oh my God, the dots are coming together. So back to JPL. So I'm reading this, and what this guy is claiming is that what the mission, the incredible historic thing we had all just covered, and then come to JPL, was a total hoax. That NASA had simply rented a studio in, I think it was Nevada, in this pamphlet, kind of reminds me of one of those Bond films. And they had completely faked the lunar landing in a soundstage in Nevada. And this guy had written this whole thing up, and he was handing it out to every member of the press corps gathered to cover the unmanned flyby of Mars a few days after the lunar landing. By the way, this was while Neil and Buzz and Collins were falling home in the command module and service module attached halfway between Earth and Moon. They were about 100,000 miles out this afternoon when all this took place. And in other words, they weren't even down in the Pacific. That hadn't splashed down yet. And the meme that NASA never went to the moon was being promulgated in the most incredible, bizarre, movie set kind of way that would stick in your memory forever. Then things got even stranger. Because I noticed Frank Bristow coming up to him again, because I hadn't realized that, they were kind of together. And the folks he had missed, which was, you know, Solomon at the Times and the guy at the LA Times and BBC, because I knew the BBC guys because we had them in New York when we were covering, you know, the other Apollo missions, the Apollo 8. This official NASA / JPL public affairs representative took this guy, Mr. Cowboy, in the long duster handing out the pamphlets that everything about Apollo was fake. He started taking him around and introducing him one-on-one to the high mucky mucks of the mainstream media gathered there at JPL from all over the world. And I watched this and I thought, this is weird. But I was young and I was embodied and imbued with the, you know, the faith in NASA. And it never occurred to me that you know, there was a double or triple or quadruple cross going on here. And I just, you know, went back to the mission. I got my credentials and, you know, we covered the flyby. And, you know, I that was the mission where I actually got on camera. I got on CBS Morning News and did an update, you know, on behalf of the CBS television network all over the world by satellite of what it was presaging that we were going past Mars, et cetera, et cetera. But the memory that haunts me is the guy in the duster handing out the pamphlet that said we never went to the moon. And my friend Jay White. Everything up. By inserting an extraordinarily false meme into the conversation. I mean, you talk about fake news these days. This meme, this idea that we never went, that we never found stuff, that we never did any of that stuff, that it's all done in a studio outside Reno, that has been with us decade after decade after decade, planted by NASA itself, by JPL, by NASA employees, by Frank Bristow, squiring this guy around and handing out the pamphlet, planting the idea, which of course is now taken root in, I don't know what I don't know what the current number is, but I would bet you that between a third and a half of Americans now believe, based on decades, almost a half century of this lie, that we never went to the moon. Well, tonight, as we move through the evening, you're going to see that how the lie was constructed, how it has been put off on honest folks for decade after decade, and the evidence assembled here tonight to prove that it is a lie, and not only that it's a lie, but it's probably the greatest one in American history, only, you know, outstripping somewhat the current lie, which is all this about Russians and collusion and the Trump administration and Trump himself and all that. Talk about diversion. And you're going to hear me argue toward these two lies are, in fact, exquisitely, inextricably intertwined. Because if we're right, if we really did go to the moon and all the stuff we're going to show you is really there, which the evidence gathered from so many different sources, including people that can't be part of any conspiracy right here on planet Earth, you don't need a $20 billion space program to go and check out what we're going to talk about tonight. If all that is true, then it means we have turned a page, because earlier this week, Elon Musk demonstrated how to democratize and make cost-effective ordinary Americans, ordinary people anywhere in the world, going to the moon themselves and checking out what we have found. Furthermore, he is on record of wanting to send two tourists who apparently have plunked down hefty amounts of cash to nail down these seats. His plan, announced last year, is to send later this year two tourists, two paying tourists, two civilians, two folks who I definitely presume will not have signed any non-disclosures. They're not part of the U.S. military, haven't sworn, you know, to uphold the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, which by they get you because, you know, leaking this stuff out makes you an enemy, either foreign or domestic. No, all that is bypassed if those two folks go around the moon and take pictures with current CCD technology, off-the-shelf cameras, like he put in his launch this week that gave us those stunning views. And Elon Musk is planning to do this, according to the current record, before the end of this year. Now, I've said on the show that I think it's going to slip. I thought it might slip 2019, which would be really cute on the 50th anniversary of Apollo 69, 2019, for Elon Musk to basically blow the doors off with his technology and with his tourists by sending them around the moon to broadcast live the incredible streamed images of artificial structures on the moon that totally confirm what Apollo actually saw and photographed and brought home. So with that as prologue, Mr. Widener, welcome to the other side of midnight.
Hey, thanks for having me, Richard.
Jay, you there?
I think so.
There you are. Ah, you can never.
I was.
Oh my God! You should mute.
That's not me.
Oh, who was? Whoever's sneezing, and what I've just said is nothing to sneeze at, is should be muted. Okay, and Greg, we will get to you momentarily, because we found Greg Ahrens. He is online. So, Jay, thoughts. Where do you think we are tonight in terms of this soap opera?
Well, first off, I never ever said that we didn't go to the moon.
Super. I wanted to put that on the record. Okay.
I've never been to the moon. I can't tell you what's there.
Of course you can. You've never been to Madagascar. I'm sure you can tell me what's there.
Well,
because we can't be everywhere. We have to trust data. The thing we really have to trust is independent data. And we're going to lay out tonight for people a range of independent data showing, A, what's really there, and B, how hard NASA has worked over time, over 50 years, to keep us from knowing, a contingent of the population kept in chains into thinking this lie that they've been spreading is real. So start where you want. How did they do it? How did they basically convince a huge portion of Americans that we never did this incredible thing?
Well, I think we have to skip ahead, or I guess behind, about 15 years from 1969 to about 1954. And if we look at the literature around 54, 55, we can see that, especially if we look at the work of T. Townsend Brown, we can see that they were making incredible advances in anti-gravity. And of course, they picked up a lot of the knowledge from Die Glock, which was built by the Nazis. And of course, we imported the German scientists into America pre-1954. And they brought a lot of this anti-gravity technology in. But the Germans had been working on anti-gravity for a long time, over 100 years at least.
So hang on. So you're saying the first lie was we didn't go to the moon with rockets. We went with real anti-gravity spaceships.
Yes. And as you know, Richard, I've talked, you and I hung out a lot in the early 90s. And I did talk to a lot of people at NASA that you introduced me to. And they confided with me in private that they had gone to the moon in the 50s. And I was aghast. I remember bouncing the idea off you, and you just laughed at me. And I knew you knew more than I knew. And I was flabbergasted that they were telling me this. And
well, hang on. It's one thing to suspect. It's the other thing, like tonight, to have the data, to have the goods, to have the evidence, like it's 1,000% bulletproof. And I don't like to talk about stuff publicly until I really can rest my hat on it and say, this is reality. This is what we can prove. So I've been so skeptical about this sidebar, this story, because I've tried to fit it in with the other data that we've been allowed to see. And it's only been in the last couple, 3 years that it's kind of come together. And I now can offer tonight, I'm going to talk about this on the show later, you and I and a bunch of other people are going to put this technology together, this anti-grav technology, which is in public domain. Yes, I mean, I've got guys I've talked to who've done this in their garages, in their backyards now.
So have I.
We put this technology in orbit. Remember what Heinlein said, once you're in orbit, you're halfway to anywhere. We put it into orbit in what's called a CubeSat. NASA, you know, sells them to you in lots, 1, 2, 4, 8, 20, that kind of thing. And the mass and the size get bigger and bigger. But there's already a bus, a spacecraft built by NASA that is space rated. And you put your gear into this NASA system. And then they've even set up an office now for independent projects to go into space. There's a NASA office now that will help us do this. And we will send a T. Townsend Brown space drive spacecraft out of Earth orbit into lunar orbit, change orbits, look at various incredible things there. Then we'll go to Mars and we'll do close-ups of the things that are on Mars. And then we'll come home and we'll get ready for our New York City parade. Well, it's Richard, all doable. It's all doable now.
Richard, I think we're much closer to that point than we've ever been.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're right about this. I know someone who personally knows Robert Bigelow and says that he has his own anti-gravity saucer that he uses to fly around. And I think we're much closer. I, too, if I could only get $50,000, I could make an anti-gravity device, because I now pretty much understand what Brown was saying, and it's not really that difficult to understand.
Through my contact, Tom Vallone. Do you know Tom Vallone? Did I ever introduce you to Tom?
Tom's a great.
Okay. Tom introduced me to some people, including a couple that are working on T. Townsend Brown technology that have actual working models in their home labs. And we're going to take that technology and put it in a CubeSat and send it where we want it to. Because what people need to understand is, with current rocket technology, and someone please mute your coughing on the air. Do not do that. Find the mute button. With current technology, you have rockets, which basically a lot of fuss and fury, like, you know, the Falcon Heavy on Tuesday. And then they're coasting. The Tesla and Starman are going to coast for a billion plus years, endlessly orbiting the sun, because the rocket fuel has run out. The difference between rockets and T. Townsend Brown anti-grav technology is like the difference, as Mark Twain once said, between the lightning bug and the lightning. Because once you're in orbit, Jay, as you know, with a true anti-grav system, you never need to turn it off. And even if it only has a few ounces of thrust, it uses no fuel. It uses only energy from the sun, electricity, and it can be like the Energizer Bunny. It'll keep going and going and going. And furthermore, it will accelerate. So I've done the calculations based on one of Tom's friends who has this sitting in his garage, and he sent me the videos, and there's no doubt in my mind that it works. It will work better, by the way, in space in a vacuum. And with that technology, we can send a CubeSat, my friend, between Earth orbit and the moon in 1.5 days.
Well, I think that this is what Elon Musk is actually doing. He's pushing the envelope with rocket technology, and he's going to get out there in orbit in space with cameras, and then he's going to capture the goodies that are out there. I mean, I've had NASA insiders tell me recently that where they denied it before, they're now copying it. Yes, there is a secret space program. It's not as big as the one I'm saying that exists. I think it's a much bigger program than what NASA is copying to, but they're copying to it. And I'm also being told that these technologies are about to be released to major corporations like Tesla. And this is what I think Elon Musk is really doing. I don't think he has any intention of going to Mars with a rocket. I think he wants to press the envelope so that his company, SpaceX, and Tesla can become the premier anti-grav vehicle. And we could actually be living in the Jetsons in like 5 or 10 years.
Oh, my God. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes to the bottom of the hour. We've got to take a break then. Why don't we start with the premise that you came at this, which was a lot of the NASA imagery that purports to record the guys on the moon is actually incredibly deliberately fake. So let's start there.
You want to start right now?
Yeah, sure. We got five minutes.
So, you know, it was really through my work with you, Richard, that I made that discovery. Going with you to Ames and to Houston and leafing through those catalogs of pictures that we went through, the thousands of pictures. And I began, you know, picking up a pattern that sort of bothered me. And it really wasn't until I bought the DVD of the movie 2001 in the year 2001 that I began noticing a vast similarity between some of the effects that Stanley Kubrick was doing in 2001 and some, not all, but a lot of the images that I was seeing with you working on the NASA stuff. And I realized that there was a strange deep focus in the pictures that Kubrick also had in his special effects in 2001. And I, being an ex-movie expert on special effects, realized that I was looking at front screen projection used in both cases. And we know from 2001 Space Odyssey and Douglas Trumbull, who worked with Kubrick, that nobody could do front screen projection like Kubrick.
Wow.
And when we get back, I'll describe what that is, and then Kubrick's confession in The Shining. But this does not detract from anything that you've discovered or that we've discovered through the Russian probes or anything like that. There is stuff on the moon. There is an alien presence on the moon. There is humans on the moon. There is a lot of things going on that were being hid deliberately from us. And it doesn't surprise me that NASA had a guy running around claiming the moon landings were fake. They wanted people to know that some of the stuff was fake.
No, they wanted to think all of the stuff was fake.
That's right. They did.
Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about after you lay out how you figured this out, because this is such a brilliant piece sleuthing. To use a Trumpism, sleuthing. I think he tweeted that the other morning. So, you know, Jay's sleuthing here is so elegant because it brings us right back around to one of his and mine, you know, kind of greatest loves, which is Stanley Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke and what they did in 2001, A Space Odyssey, which is so predictive in so many ways, up to and including the involvement of the intelligence community in basically, as I used to say, stamping out burning ducks. Because in the film, remember, they say categorically, well, you had to sign these security oaths because the council, you know, has not yet decided whether to make this public. And then at the very end of the film, they reveal who is in fact the council. Tell you what, hold it there. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Jay Widener. We're talking the idea, did we really go to the moon, or is all the bizarre noise out there that we never did, in fact, carefully orchestrated NASA noise to keep those of us in the middle, those of us who believe mainstream media, those of us who actually might look up and say, did we? To keep us from ever figuring out that we actually did and what we really found. In the background, you're going to hear some music tonight from one of NASA's albums. Yes, NASA commissioned an album called Methodia, which debuted in a Greek temple in Athens the night we landed another spacecraft on Mars back in, I forget what year it was. Someone will remind me. So many of these things have happened, all collapsed in time. You're on the other side of midnight. Time shall resume when we return. Oh.
Club 19.5ers. This is Chris, your friendly neighborhood Other Side of the Midnight podcast creator. I wanted to pop in right quick to tell you about the new club perk we just set up this week. We've got a new live chat server. We set up our very own Discord chat server this week so all of you can get together and chat with each other and to Richard and the Bridge Crew. What I hope you will enjoy and take advantage of is the fact that now you will be able to ask your questions of the guest during the live show if you don't want to call in. I know I've had a question or two in the past, and well, if I made it up to the 2 a.m. hour, I just didn't want to be on the radio since I was shy. So we have a chat channel just for guest questions. And if you find it hard to stay up at all for the show, but have a question you would like asked, then go ahead and post it to the channel. Questions will be read out to the guest for you, so you will get your answer as time permits. You're welcome to join the chat server at any time. To find the link to the server, please go to theothersideofmidnight.com and click on the Club 19.5 member benefits link in the left column. Be sure to log in first. You'll find the link to the chat server information page there. It's important that you follow the directions on that page so I'll be able to get you into the Club 19.5 group as soon as possible. You see, only Club 19.5 members have access to your special chat channels, so I will be verifying everyone that comes in to be sure you are a member. Otherwise, you'll get stuck in the Red Shirts group. And we all know what happens to the Red Shirts in Star Trek, don't we? So don't be a Red Shirt. The chat server runs on anything. If you're connected to the internet, you can access the chat server. So join us all in the server, and let's get the Other Side of Midnight community together and chat. But wait, you say you aren't a member of Club 19.5? No problem. Click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left column on theothersideofmidnight.com. And we'll see you there.
And welcome back to the Other Side of Midnight here on February, what is tonight? The 10th. The year is whipping along. My gosh, whipping along. So yeah, this is an actual NASA album. The writer and author and producer and impresario is Vangelis. I can never remember which way to pronounce that. And this was done live the night that the Mars 2001 Space Odyssey mission, named specifically after the movie, which Jay and I are about to talk about, was going into Mars orbit. And NASA chose this concert to broadcast via the internet around the world. And they recorded, I mean, talk about a chain of dots. Ancient history, ancient civilization, democracy, connected to Mars, connected to Kubrick, connected to Arthur, and connected to NASA's real activities in 2001. Jay, take it away. How did you figure out the con?
Well, you know, I like to wind backwards just a little bit to get everything in context since we have...
Oh, sure. Sure, by all means.
So we first off, we have to understand that JFK, John F. Kennedy, had a deep relationship with Forrestal, who was the first Secretary of Defense. And Forrestal and JFK went to Germany in 1945, right after the war ended, and they saw the German stuff. And Kennedy was well aware of the anti-gravity research that was being done after World War II through Forrestal, who was telling him, because Forrestal sat on the MJ-12 committee. And after Forrestal was assassinated, Kennedy decided that he was going to run for president, and he wanted this anti-gravity free energy technology to be put out into the public. He knew about it. We know from the FBI document that he showed Marilyn Monroe the equipment because she told Dorothy Kilgallen. And so we know that that's true. So JFK, when he made his famous speech about getting to the moon by the end of the decade in the 1960s, he knew that that rocket technology was never going to get them there. He thought that he was tricking NASA and the military-industrial complex into releasing this technology because otherwise they would not get to the moon. NASA and the boys in back room had other plans and decided that they were going to instead keep this stuff secret. And you can't blame them. I mean, we were in a Cold War, at least I think we were.
Are you sure? See, to me, the whole Cold War was a total fake, too.
Yes, it was.
I mean, fake news did not arrive with Trump. We have been living in fake history since probably World War II.
Yeah, I would agree. Even before Titanic.
Well, history. I think it's been accelerated. But World War II was another dividing line because what happened to World War II? The Nazis came out of the closet. The concept of the breakaway civilization, the idea that, you know, part of the human race has actually gone out there and done in stunning things and inherited all this stuff we were all supposed to inherit, but they kept us from knowing because the Nazis invaded NASA and the Nazis killed JFK. We're going to talk about that tonight, and I think I can make that case. And they've diverted the timeline.
And don't forget, it's not just the Reinhard Gehlen infiltrated the intelligence services.
Yep. Well, set up the CIA after the
Germans also and came into the nuclear power industry and took it over. It was actually quite astonishing. The pharmaceutical businesses were all taken over by the Germans. What happened to the United States in the 1950s is actually almost unbelievable, but we literally let the enemy in the gate, and the enemy took over our entire country and turned us into the research and development arm of their secret space program. And this is what Kennedy knew about, was trying to expose. Now, what's interesting, so we flash forward. Now, I've also been intrigued and kind of wondering how Arthur C. Clarke, and to a lesser degree Stanley Kubrick, were able to predict the future so accurately. And I believe...
Well, hang on. You want, is that a rhetorical question or should I answer? Because I know how.
I know how too. And I'm more than welcome to hear what you think.
After you, Alphonse. Come on.
Okay.
It's your show tonight.
Okay, so what I think it happened here, I'm actually pretty sure of it, from my inside sources, is that the military-industrial complex, NASA, intelligence agencies, they really, really liked Arthur. They thought he was a genius. They loved his books. They loved him, his thinking. He invented the satellite, stationary satellite. He was a genius in his own right. And I think that they took him under their wings and showed him what they were really doing, and I'm talking like in the 50s, 57, 58, 59, and they showed him what they had learned in their probes and what they had done in the solar system, and he, while he didn't tell Stanley everything, he did still enough that Stanley figured out the rest, because Stanley was a smart guy too, And I think that, you know, by 68, they knew a lot more than they're letting on about Mars, about Saturn, about Iapetus. And
Wait. All the clues are in 2001. All you have to decode. Remember, I've always wanted to do a night with you where we're on stage and there's a few thousand people out front, you know, like we've done before. And we go through almost frame by frame, we deconstruct 2001 and demonstrate with the evidence that what you've just been saying is absolutely 100% true.
Yeah, it's the plot for 2001. There's a secret space program. They find they create a cover story of a virus breaking out on the moon, but their real mission is to uncover alien evidence on the moon. They're sending probes that are sending signals down under the soil so they can find things. The whole thing is deliberately an attempt to find alien artifacts on the moon. Stanley plays it pretty subtle, but still, it's pretty much there. And even the mission to Jupiter, which was really in the script, the original script, a mission to Saturn, which is much more interesting, even that is kept secret from Bowman, who really doesn't find out about the secretness of the mission until after he destroys Hal's brain. So over and over, we see the secretiveness, this search for alien presences, alien intelligences, and this strange fascination.
You want to hear one of the really, really weird quinky dinkies, as Kintia's friend Bill used to say. You know the scene where Heywood Floyd, the head of quote NASA, actually. What is it, the Council for Space or something? I forget what acronym they used. It was because Kubrick didn't want to really say NASA, but we all now know he meant NASA, right? So Floyd is landing at the Clavius base. The pedals are opening, and the spacecraft is seen from several cameras descending through the open roof, like, you know, a huge astrodome on the moon, and then the pedals close over it, and the air is pumped back in, and it's sitting on this platform all in red. Do you remember the name of the spacecraft that Heywood Floyd landed on the moon in?
I don't remember.
Ares.
Uh-huh.
And Mars. Ares, of course, means Mars. Uh-huh. Now, do you remember the image, that red-lit image of the Ares spacecraft sitting on this huge elevator with the huge hydraulic pistons and all these control rooms around with guys going about their work? As this thing is slowly being lowered to the floor of this interior cavern in the Clavius base. Remember what it looks like?
Oh, yeah.
It's a face. It's the face on Mars on the side of the Ares spacecraft that takes Heywood Floyd, the head of, quote, NASA, to the moon to check out the artifact, the TMA, Tycho Magnetic Anomaly 1, that he tells everybody they can't talk about because they have to sign security oaths because the public is not yet ready to know. So in this one film, you've got Mars, civilization on Mars, civilization on the moon. You've got Brookings. You've got it all. And then you've got at the end a change where there is a transmogrification, where humanity becomes an interplanetary solar system civilization again. And that's the precipice in 2018 that we're sitting on tonight.
Amen to that. It was an amazing film. That's a great pickup you got there with the Mars thing. I like it because it was also red. So
yes, the whole thing was red. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. One other thing. I have a slightly different take on Arthur and Kubrick and those folks. Okay. Are you familiar with a lot of my Egyptology work, where I've gone back into ancient mythos and mythologies and architecture and archaeology and all that and tried to figure out the connecting glue between why NASA is so overwhelmingly Egyptian in all their symbology? And we talked about this going decades back. Remember the night we had the conversation about Sirius?
Yes.
That first conversation?
Yes.
And I won't take the time, but something really, really bizarre happened that night to me in outside New York City. Something absolutely mind-blowingly bizarre, but we'll have to save that for another show because we spend all night doing these stories between the two of us. Anyway, this mythology now comes full circle because as part of the Egyptian mythology, remember, there were good guys and bad guys. And the bad guys followed Set, remember?
Yep.
And the good guys followed Horus, okay? And who are they going down through time who basically in the Egyptian mythos were a group, a band following Horus, trying to recreate the first time, the time when humanity was human before the fall. Remember what they were called?
The cult of Osiris.
You're close. You're close. The followers of Horus, or in Egyptian, the Shemsu Hor.
Right.
I believe down through history, there have been interesting figures, public figures, who have again and again and again worked to steer us toward the first time to recreate when humans were really human and not chattel and not slaves and not confined, as Alex Jones keeps saying, so elegantly on a prison planet. Because that's what this is until we break away. And, you know, Elon Musk the other afternoon demonstrated how we're going to break away by simply going to the moon and reconnecting with all this stuff. And I believe Elon and Arthur and Stanley and Isaac and a whole bunch of other guys that you and I know, if not personally, at least by name, are part of the modern day Shemsu Hor.
Well, there's, of course, a lot of truth to that. The alchemical traditions also
speak of
masters that somehow can pass through time without aging, and then they pass knowledge down. And
how else can you describe Jay, a guy, Elon Musk, who basically arrives here with 28 grand and spends on a little tiny, you know, Silicon Valley company. And the next few years, he makes billions and billions. He creates his own space program and now has outpaced NASA to the tune of $1 billion to 90 million per launch. Is he really that good? Is he that much of a polymath? Is he that much of a Renaissance man to create the cars and the drilling things and the power systems and the Hyperloop and all the other things he's talking about? He's not just talking about, he's doing. Or is this, in fact, the head of the spear to take us into a real future, which we were supposed to have in 2001, and look what the hell they did to that.
I think there's no doubt about it. I think that Steve Jobs and a lot of these people that run these corporations are receiving technology from the secret space program. I actually have a personal acquaintance of mine who was in the Navy for 28 years, and then he got out of the Navy and immediately, within 2 years, became a millionaire, and then within 5 years was a billionaire, and manufacturing super high technology for the Navy. And what he was really doing, I realized after he died, was he was taking technology that had already been developed and was legitimizing it through corporate fronts. And we know from knowledge from secret space insiders that Macintosh technology and pads were around 25, 30 years ago. And that, you know, it was just handed down to people like Steve Jobs and Elon Musk as a way to force things to the surface.
And Arthur C. Clarke. Remember the scene in the Discovery spacecraft where you have those two iPads lying on the counter of the command deck of the spacecraft? They're having dinner and they're watching the BBC program on their mission to Jupiter. That's an iPad decades before iPads were in anybody's consciousness except Arthur Clarke's.
Yeah, his mind was absolutely astounding.
But no, you're missing my point. It's not that he was that genius. He was part of the messenger corps, the group, the institutional group designed at the right time when the physics peaks, Jay. Remember the hyperdimensional torsion field model? You can only seize control of the consciousness of human beings back from the bad guys at a certain point in history when the physics is with you, when surf is up, when the wind is at your back. And that, I think, has all been focused on this year, because 2018 in the physics is the year we bust the doors down on everything falls out of the closet.
It does seem that way. And I think, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Trump, and I try to stay away from talking about it as much as I can. But I have to tell you that, you know, his uncle was the guy that was sent in by MIT to get Tesla's papers when Tesla died. And this was Trump's favorite uncle. And so we have to understand that Trump probably understands a lot of what we're talking about tonight. And I think he's going to release it because it's the only way to save the economy is to bring this technology as fast as possible to the forefront. And that's why I think there's going to be a corporation, maybe Elon, that's going to release these anti-gravity cars, and you're going to be able New York to LA in about 4 hours or even 4 minutes.
By the way, time is fugiting like mad. We have less than 10 minutes at the top of the hour. So let me do this. On the show, I don't like to make claims you can't prove. I'm going to try to prove tonight that Elon Musk is up to his eyebrows in the symbolism of the good guys. Remember, you can't tell the players without some kind of a scorecard, because both of them use the same rituals and symbology, because the physics and consciousness are totally inextricably entwined. And if you're going to do the right thing in public consciousness to change the curve, to bring humanity, you know, back to itself again, you can't do it any old time. You got to do it according to the ancient book, which describes the rituals. So with that, I want to bring in an Air Force veteran who's been a member of the Enterprise mission for some time, Greg Ahrens. Greg, kind of do the setup. Why do I think we've got proof tonight that Elon Musk is up to his 19.5 eyebrows in what we've been talking about for decades? Greg, unmuting helps.
Okay, there it is.
There you are.
Okay.
You're on.
Okay, I'm not so sure, but I thought, you know, I'm looking at these. Wait a minute.
You got to kill the speaker. You should have a headset. That's why we're getting feedback.
No, I have a headset. Put it on.
Put it on.
It's on.
Well, kill the speakers in the background because they're carrying a delayed voice from me.
There's no speakers.
Okay, well, someone had the speakers on. Make sure they're on.
Hang on a second.
We can, fortunately, because of Chris Spell, edit this out of the recording, which is being done on our own server. We're recording this separately from Blog Talk, so regardless of what they do, and as you know, they have done a lot of things over the last few months. They can't keep us off the air because we have a totally unbroken record. Very high quality, by the way. Chris works on that very hard. So we'll be able to continue past the noises. I hear they've stopped. Greg, you ready?
I think so. Super. Can you hear it now?
We can hear you now. Crystal clear.
Okay. Well, I guess the, you know, I took a look at the alignments from the launch, and from the 8 minutes later when they landed the side core boosters.
Stunning.
And
by the way, all these are up on the other side of midnight. Hang on. If you go to the other side of midnight.com, folks, and you go to tonight's guest page, scroll down, you'll see a huge bunch of images from me, and then a huge bunch of images from Jay. And we're addressing specifically, we're going to go down in a moment to number 5 of my images at the top of my row, because this is what Greg and I both noticed, I guess, simultaneously, which makes it pretty convincing that Elon Musk is operating according to this hidden hyperdimensional physics torsion field code. Right?
Right. And I've looked at several of his, you know, his previous Falcon 9 launches, and he always seems to work with these alignments.
Yeah, let me stop you there. Jay, what was his rocket series called? Elon Musk's?
Jay? I can't remember.
Falcon.
Falcon, right, I'm sorry.
Falcon 9, Falcon Heavy. And what is the Falcon? It's Horus. Greg, go for it.
Okay. So from the launch, I took used my Stellarium program, and I used Titusville, Florida. I looked at, nothing really stood out there except Orion's Belt being 11 above the eastern horizon, and Sirius being 11 degrees below the eastern horizon, and Anka on the due south on the meridian at 19.5 degrees above.
Oh my God, isn't that special?
The Anka being the brightest star of Phoenix, the bird.
The resurrection.
The resurrection. So that'd be at its highest point on the due south. Anyway, that day, The observations from Los Angeles, Mintaka was at minus 19.5 below the eastern horizon.
And Mintaka is one of the stars in one the belt of Orion. One of the
belt stars on belt of Orion. And the sun was at 39 degrees 40 minutes above the southwestern horizon.
Oh, my God, twice 19.5.
And Los Angeles, that's a SpaceX mission control.
Yep.
So, but I think really the twin landing, which if you look at the picture, these two pillars standing there, twin pillars, Joachim and Boaz, you know that.
Yep. Those are, by the way, item number 3 and 4 in my images tonight in Radio with Pictures.
And they just kind of came out of the sky and smoke and everything, and then there they are and standing there. But loss of the twin. Okay, at the twin landing, Mars was minus 39 degrees below the eastern horizon from Titusville. Vega was at 17 degrees above the northwest horizon. Vega.
Resurrection.
And observation of the Great Pyramid, Mars at minus 39 below the eastern horizon, Sirius at plus 39, and above the southwestern horizon.
All right, so people get the idea. Let's move to the third burn. You know,
Third burn.
Go ahead.
You had a picture, and there was a guy named Pickering, I believe.
It's number 5. He was at the MMT, the Multi-Mission Telescope in Arizona. Arizona seems to be kind of Masonic Central. And we watched the burn. There's an actual video that you can connect to through the website. Anyway, you noted that the video was taken and the burn started at 19:30 hours Arizona time.
Arizona time, right.
19.5.
And Orion is prominent in the, well, the picture that they have, I think it's the same one, has a little pointer pointing right to the Orion belt stars. But, excuse me.
I mean, in my mind, there's zero doubt that Elon is part of the family. And when you look at him, I mean, he comes off like Tom Swift and Leonardo da Vinci and Espinoza all wrapped into one. He's a philosopher. He's a technologist. He's a polymath. He's a genius. He's figured out financially how to make this all work because, of course, on planet Earth in the current epoch, unless it works financially, it ain't going to work. And on Tuesday, he democratized the solar system.
Oh, hey, Richard.
Yes.
There was a quote. There's a video of him at a press conference, and he says, you can tell it's real because it looks so fake.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember that.
I thought that was kind of a corollary to, you know, it'll be real when it's on TV.
Yep. Exactly. No. Okay, hold it there, everyone. You're on the other side of midnight. NASA's Vangelis, that's how you're supposed to pronounce that, according to Kinthea, and she's an expert on art and music, and I will follow her lead. This was a concert, remember, done the night that the 2001 Space Odyssey spacecraft, named after Arthur Clarke and Stanley Kubrick's movie, entered Mars orbit. Talk about forecasting the future to come. You're on the other side of midnight, talking about those things we could only talk about at this time of night, and now it's everywhere. We shall return. Thanks for listening to this exciting first hour. Now, the second and third hour of the show is available to Club 19.5 members only. Please support the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 and join our very interesting community. To do that, please visit the website, theothersideofmidnight.com, and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350-plus shows that we have done. Now, recent Club 19.5 member archive recording have the commercials removed, and the sound quality has been enhanced. You'll also receive a dedicated private podcast feed that contains these enhanced show recordings. And you'll be able to download the MP3 files directly from the archive if you prefer. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll have access to a private chat server that members use to chat about the show, during the show, and you will have a direct channel to post a question that will be read on the air to the guest. And you'll have a place to post questions during our open hailing frequencies. We realize that not everyone wants to call in live, and this gives you an easy way to participate in a live show without having to participate. Club 19.5 members can use this private chat to talk about the shows, ask questions, suggest new guests, and I may even pop on from time to time to answer specific questions. Also, the entire Bridge crew is in these participating chat channels, so you can interact with them as well. You'll also be the first to preview our new videos and reports. We'll be adding exclusive new features to Club 19.5 as we go forward, and boy, have we got some amazing things to tell you about in the coming weeks. So please support the show and don't miss all the exciting new things we have planned. I want to thank all our Club 19.5 members because without your guys' support, this show would not be on the air. Please help us continue growing the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 today. And when I say we really need you, we really need you. Over and out.